For this was I prepared. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capitol, California, with the Absolute Philosopher. For this was I prepared. For this was I prepared. For this was I prepared. Mommy, I want to be in the next grade. Well, that's fine. In a couple weeks, you'll take your tests and see if you pass the grade that you're in, so you can go into the next grade. But Mommy, I want to go in the next grade. I want to go in the next grade. Well, did you learn your lesson as you went along? Did you do your homework? Did you do the things you're supposed to do as you went along? Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, then you have nothing to be concerned about. You'll go right into the next grade. But Mommy, I want to go in the next grade. Well, why are you so interested in going to the next grade? Well, all my friends are going there. Sweetheart, you're going there too, you can be sure, because you're a good student. You paid attention, you minded, and you did your things. Today, I'd like to give you two illustrations. One called Joseph, and one called Ink Heart. Joseph is a real man who is in prison, who is one of our students, has been a student for many years. Ink Heart is a book, and it's a book about creation of characters and adventures and all sorts of interesting things. And both these, the book and Ink Heart and Joseph, the man who is in prison, have a great deal in common. A great deal of common. They both offer you, the listener, or you, the reader, or you, the participant, the opportunity of the absolute profound thought of being master of yourself. Now, last night, I watched a movie, Ink Heart, and it was about some creatures that were created in a book. And these were creatures created in a book. And like many books that exist, the creatures are ugly or good, whatever the author chooses to have them be. Well, the author of this book chose to have these creatures be creatures who were on the edge of understanding humanity and yet still being just creatures of a figment of someone's imagination. And the creatures that were in this book were quite exciting, but not as exciting as the primary character of the book itself. The primary character of the book itself is a man who had a gift. And his gift was that when he read a story out loud, the characters took control. They took control. They began to possess the life. And they came through the person who read the story and became real creatures, as real as anything can be, real creatures in life. And if these were ugly creatures that this person chose to read about, then the creatures that came to life were ugly creatures. And a point that was very evident early in the movie was that whenever this man would read, whatever he would read would come into being. Now, what he did not think, what he did not take into consideration, was that whatever he would read came alive. Whatever he would read that he would write came alive too. And he could have easily rewritten some of the characters as he was reading them and given them a little more harmonious life, a little more happy attitude toward life. But he read them as they were, with all of the anger and anxiety that the characters had. And so he let loose some interesting characters upon the earth. And these characters didn't seem to be concerned about anybody else in particular, but they were just concerned about themselves and the people that were brought them into being, because they wanted the people that brought them into being to put them into being more. And so they would have them read stories of Alibaba, 40 Knights, 40 Thieves, and how great riches poured upon them, and all these things. And they had people reading to them who were capable or so forth, and they did that. And these people were without morals, without values, without direction in life other than what the reader gave to them. And if the reader's values weren't strong, then these people's values were not strong. Well, the movie went into great details, and it was very dramatic. But if you were to look at the movie and say to yourself, each one of these characters and each one of these actions is nothing but a pen on paper, nothing but the creation of the mind, which is big, but a pen on paper is better. And if you could visualize it, and it would take a good visualization, of course, but if you could visualize it, those characters, when you just say they're dust, they're back to their original purity and integrity, if you will. They're back to dust. They have no substance. They have no reality to them. They have no existence other than the existence that the writer or author gives to them. And it showed how an author, in writing these various things, is, and then the author wrote himself into the story. And when he got in the story, he didn't like it. And he wanted to be out of it because they were going to kill him. And of course, he was really in the story. And so he would really be dead. He's not just pen and ink, you know. And so at the conclusion of the movie, the daughter, who had been read to in the first place, who was the beginning of this whole operation, and her mother disappeared 9 years before, when the father first learned that he could read. Well, the daughter found out that she too could read. She could read anything, and it would happen. And in her naivete, she said that, and so these characters captured her and had her read things that they wanted read. And she read them. And then she realized that, hey, no way. And it came to the final acts of the scene, which was the shadow was the dark, evil creature that was going to devour everything and control everything. And they were going to symbolically marry this girl off to this evil creature. And they set the stage for it, and it was quite a charming arrangement, you know. And but the girl, pretty cool, the role she had to play. And so she is reading, but she somehow gets a hold of a pen, which happens to be a very significant pen, of course. And so she's got this book in front of her that she has to read from, which is consummating the story that was written in the book. And she didn't like it. She had never heard the end. And she didn't like it. And so instead of reading from the book, she takes a pen and writes it on her arm. And then she reads what she writes on her arm. So she's reading what's written, you know. And she's reading it and reading it, but she's not reading fast enough. Because all sorts of interesting things are happening. And then her dad calls out to her, you know, do something, you know, and somebody calls out. And so finally she speeds up a little bit. And she takes care of this evil guy who made himself emperor or something and had him turned to dust, which she just did. And then all these people were people who had printing over their faces, you know, and the printing was from the book that they had come out of, you know, the page of the book. They really were a page of the book. Uh-huh. And they had captured mythical animals and enslaved them, and of course they were all released. And so finally the girl comes to this ugly creature, which everyone thinks she should have acted a little sooner on, but he was just up there doing his thing. And then she said, and you go and take care of this bad man and turn him to dust, you know, and then you turn into nothing. You become just nothing, you know. And the creature became just nothing. And there was a little love affair and so forth going on. But, and the father got back with the mother, and that was kind of nice. And the auntie, who was a pain in the neck, she turned out to be a real winner. But it was just doing, and the author himself, he said, send me back, nobody to die in here. So then she read into there, and the author who had stepped into the book went back to his home. And so he went back to his home, you know. And, but it was just really, really quite nice. Now, the girl kept saying to her father, Father, what is all this about? Why are you going looking for these ancient books in the bookstores? Why are you going to old bookstores? Why don't you look at some nice modern stuff, you know, the up-to-date stuff that she liked? And he said, no, he's got to find it. And he was a pleasant fellow, but he found it, and he was I think he repaired books, put new covers on them and things like that. And so he didn't tell her. He didn't tell her all his life, all his 9 years, what happened. Of course, she was there when it, poof, you know, went out. And at the end, he didn't have to tell her. She found out, you know. But he didn't do his job. He didn't prepare his daughter to graduate. He put himself into the situation that he was able to read books and have them come alive. And his daughter had the same gift, that she could read books and have them come alive. But it wasn't until the very end, and I don't think they really got the message then, that they could write their own script. That they could write whatever they wanted. And if they didn't have a book to write it in, they write it on their arm, you know. That they, as long as they've written it into their mind, into their heart, on their arm, on their book, or whatever, they're putting a cause in motion. And when the going got tough, then they really got going on doing the beautiful things they could do. And all of them were doing outstanding things. Dumb, because they didn't realize the power they had. But they did come across a little bit at the end. But they didn't stop and think anywhere along the line. They could have rewritten the story. They could have rewritten the book. They could have done all the changes. They could have said, and this that has become ugly and evil is now dust. Isn't that a nice way to have it be? Dust. back to its original purity and integrity. Okay. Well, this is the difficulty that we have. Everyone cannot re-watch the movie Inkheart because it is too profound. People who will watch the movie will see the evil and the ugliness, and they don't have the ability to see through the evil and the ugliness to the fundamental essence of what it is. These people were only printed words in a book, and they had the printing on their face and on their bodies. It was just an indication, and these people were symbolic parts of the book. They represented the ugliness of the ugly. They had hidden a book, and they hidden it in a box. And so this witch woman, you know, this terrible-looking woman, opens the box. She's just really, and she's the mother of this guy, apparently, but not certainly. And so she opens this box, and what's in the box? Snakes, you know, coral snakes and all sorts of terrible snakes. And she just reaches in there, takes the book out. The snakes are not interested in her because she's just a printed word, you know. Mm-hmm. And then she gives the book to the boss, and he goes on with his show. Mm-hmm. But we are taught, if we will listen for this lesson that we're taking in school for this class, if we would just listen, what are you learning? Are you learning that thoughts are things and that words have power and that words are important, and how we use these words are what make our life all the difference in the world? Well, the father and mother got back together again, happy, of course, oh, and the little girl fell in love with another character that came out of the book. and that was fine. And the guy who was trying to help all along, the fire guy, he, at the end, gave up his quest to be sent back home. He wanted to go back home to help these other people who were helping everybody, who did such a great job. And so he went away feeling unhappy. But they caught up with him. The man and his wife and the girl and her boyfriends, they caught up with him. And they said, oh, no, you do. We are riding you back home again. And right now, brr, 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 and they ride, and he's home again. And he's in this field, this lovely meadow, where he was happy. And a hummingbird came and flew and looked in his face and said, home again, huh? And then the hummingbird went back to the other story and told them that he was home again. Mm-hmm. So then he looked down the hill, and down the hill he saw his, we've been introduced to her earlier, we saw his girlfriend. And she's looking at him saying, come home, come home, you know. And he hollers to her, I'm home, you know, and they greet each other and very happy. But you see, the show, they did the parts together nicely, but they had to have so much violence in there and so much thrill and excitement for that. They had so much violence and so much thrill and excitement. They had so much violence and so much thrill and excitement, so much violence and so much thrill and excitement. And that's what you guys saw. That's what you guys saw, and that's why you left early. You didn't look past. You didn't look past. All right, now I'm going to take you to part two. I went back to the Hermitage, and I was in the bathroom, and I was washing my hands and cleaning up and so forth, and the phone rang. And I didn't answer it right away. And it rang and rang and rang. The first time it ever rang a dozen times. And it rang and rang. Finally, I went over it, and I tried to catch it, and I got a hold of it, and they said, this is the prison, and so forth, and then it disappeared. And so, okay, and I let it go. Then it called again. This moanful mournful voice called and says, you know, I should, it's well, Joseph. And I said, okay. And he said, Herb, you were mean to me, you know, you said terrible things to me, you know, and I'm going through these terrible things, and I'm going through these terrible things, and things are so terrible for me, and you know, you don't realize how terrible this is, and all I'm eating is just a piece of bread and some peanut butter and an apple, and I can't go to the mess hall and eat because every time I do that, I throw up whatever I eat, and I'm this, and I'm that, and I'm the other thing, and I'm... I lost a leg, you know, and I got to go around with it. And I got this, and I got that, and I got the other thing. And I said, Joseph, how wonderful. I said, you are certainly living the adventure of your life, aren't you? You are certainly adding a lot of excitement to it. You like that, don't you? Yeah, man, don't you talk to me like that. That's terrible. You cannot say things like that. I said, Joseph, I've been with you for years. And I said terrible things to you every once in a while. You've forgotten about them because the good things followed. But Joseph, this is merely the test of what you have learned this past year. Now, have you learned this past year that if you look at appearances and you say that that's what reality is, that's what reality is? Have you looked? Well, if you had the appearances I had, and I said, Joseph, this is your choice, not mine. And I said, Joseph, every experience that you have ever had was very ugly and very hard on you, but we got through it. I worked with you, I held your hand, and I petted you on the forehead, and I said, okay, all is okay, you're all is okay. I said, but you made the change in your own consciousness. I said, I can reiterate all sorts of things, but I don't like to talk about the past. He said, well, you talked about the past in your last letter. You talked about past. See, right away, I couldn't say a thing because I couldn't reach out to him to show him the Inkheart story. And I wasn't going to mention the Inkheart story. But I was going to tell him, Joseph, when you had this experience, the world came to an end. And I held your hand and I said, no, it's okay. You're all right. Just hang in there, Joseph. It's going to be okay. And I'm not going to repeat all the negative experiences because I don't need to do an Inkheart for you. But I do tell you that they were negative experiences that were enough to crush anybody. And we got through that. And then he built himself up and had everything, and everything was going his way. We did this a dozen times, maybe more, constantly, constantly. Then the last time that we did it so positively and so successfully, Joseph got himself a big head. He thought he was so superior, he was so wonderful, he was so fantastic, and that the chairman of the board of the prison release group was going to certainly release him because his time had come for release, and they had told him that he would, and this and that. And so he went in there with a big snoot on him, thinking that he's so very good, he's so superior. Well, the chairman of the prison, I think, who hadn't met Joseph before, looked at his case, which was very ugly, because he had been in the hole for 25 years of his 30 years or 40 years of prison, however long he was in there, but an awfully long time. Half of the prison time was in the hole. So, I mean, he looked at it and said, God, that guy's got to be bad. And then he looked at Joseph, and proud and you know, and so he's superior to everybody else, and that he's going to do whatever he wants to do. And the guy says, nah, I'm not turning this guy onto the street. I'm not letting this guy out. And all because Joseph hadn't learned humility. He hadn't learned true humility. He thought he had, but he hadn't. And so when I spoke to Joseph last night, at first I hit him hard, but then he fell down. And so I just let him go on. And he talked and he talked and he talked. And finally, he got himself talked out. And I said, Joseph, we've done this before. we can see our way through. Joseph, you're all right. Just remember, humility is very important. Be very gentle. Just be thankful for all the wonderful things you've had up to now. Write this in your book, that you are a gentle, loving, sincere person. Write this in your book. You can eat anything. No matter what's served in the chow hall, you can eat it. Other guys are eating it and living perfectly fine, but you have a mental attitude about it. You feel these things, and so you're putting these causes in motion for yourself, and that's what you're getting. Now, Joseph, when you want to get your act in order, I'm right here with you. And even when you don't have it in order, I'm right here with you. Because I don't give up on you just because you give up on yourself. Because I know, and I care. And then, of course, it was the end of the phone call. But, you see, in Inkheart, it took the entire movie for them to figure out that they could rewrite it themselves, as the girl did. At the end of the movie, the girl was writing the script special for her own purposes. That this guy is now no longer doing his naughty things, and this guy is no longer doing his naughty thing. This, and they don't want to do it, and they're just poof, 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 back dust. You know, they're nothing. I mean, it's very symbolic, very significant. Well, I said that in a nice way to Joseph. I couldn't very well take the time to give him the whole movie, but I told him, I said, I'm here for you. I'm here for you. And you matter. Not that you matter because you're the king or because you're my son or because you're somebody important, but you matter because I chose to have you matter. I chose to have every person who comes into my world, who asks me for any type of guidance or any type of help or any type of anything, I'm there for them. And I don't care whether they are bad, good, or indifferent. When I get done with them, they'll be their best. They'll be their finest. They will have rewritten their book, rewritten their life, and so that the chapters that we are now on have nothing to do with the chapters that went before. Think about it. Think about it. And think where you stand on this, and it's pretty shitty where you stand, really. Who said, forgive 7 times 70 times? Who said it?
And unconditional love.
Unconditional love. Who said it? Who said it?
Jesus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't mean that you have to answer me, but who said it? Is he our spiritual guide, our essence, our love? Do we follow at all what he says? Or do we just think that they're pretty words? Can you forgive 7 times 70 times? Can you forgive the people who did aught against you? People who were making your world topsy-turvy? Can you forgive? Can Joseph forgive the officers who reacted to him based upon how he was reacting to them? You know? Not very nice. It's time to rewrite the book. It's time to forget the past. Forgive, forget. And you see, that's what's hard for people to do. They cannot forget. Well, I forgive you, but I can't forget it. Well, that's true. And that's terrible. That's terrible. Because when you cannot forget the past, you cannot forgive it either. It's still right there, very much in your heart and in your world. And the thing is, why go on in this life experience if we're going to be held accountable for what we've done in our past if we cannot set a new cause in motion? If we cannot be new people, then just die. And then your next experience will be the same thing. But the thing is, that's okay. That's all right. I'm saying these things to you not so much to be concerned. I'm saying these things to you to think about what you're doing. Think about what you're saying. Give me your note. The And as you think about what you're doing and think about what you're saying, you got it. And then you say to yourself, Ellen, Sylvia, Ingeborg, Herb, you say to yourself, for this,
I was prepared.
I was prepared. For this, I was prepared. You see, and that's the point. For this, I was prepared. And that's what we want to always remember, because that's what we're working on. We're not, you're not prepared to be a little child. You're prepared to be an adult. You're not prepared to be held accountable for the things you did in your learning experience. You're, who are you now? What are you doing now? Sometimes people have done terrible things, but that was a past time for them. So now they have to be forgiven, and Joseph has to be forgiven, not for his past, but for the fact that he holds on to it. Because we are not concerned with what anyone else, their past is. We're not concerned in the slightest. But we're concerned, are they holding on to it? And for this, we are prepared to let go and live in the now and live a very dynamic, beautiful, uplifting, fantastic life. And if you're going to look at movies and you're going to see the ugliness and the meanness and the disgusting stuff in the movie, then that's you. If you're going to look at the movie and you're going to find the profundity in it, the depth of it, the magic of it, the light in it, even, it was there quite often. But if you're not ready, then this is what you're doing with your life. Your life is just a big pile of shit. Your life is a big pile of shit because you look at the ugliness of it instead of looking at the beauty of it. Did you have a beautiful mother and father?
Yes.
Not always. They had to chastise me, you know. Did you have a lovely home? Well, it wasn't what my neighbors had. Yes, I had a lovely home. My dad and my mom were there. My home was wonderful. In my home, we had happiness. In my home, we ate together. We played together. We did things together. We didn't have a fancy castle, but I never knew what a fancy castle was like until I saw it in a storybook, you know. But all my neighbor friends, they didn't have fancy castles either, you know. And so, but I appreciated everything I had. That's my home. And this is why E.T. wanted to go home.
Uh-huh.
And you wouldn't want to go to his home because it didn't have people you knew in it. And just like the people in these storybook things, they didn't want to go to somebody else's home. They wanted to go to their home where their heart throb was, where their life was. So train yourself. Train yourself. For this you are prepared to forgive the past, release the past, let go of the past, forget the past, and what are we teaching? To live
in the now.
In the now. And when you can do that, then that's what you've been prepared for. Then you can graduate to the now. But if you're not going to let go of the past, you cannot graduate into now. If you're not going to let go of your second grade, you can't go into third grade. It's just the way it is. Can you let go of your second grade? Well, all my friends are there. Well, your friends are going to be in third grade now, too, because you're going to third grade. Oh, you know, because they don't think of that. Oh, I have to go to a new town, a new city, a new place. Well, same thing, just a lot of wonderful people. And just the nice people that you met here, you're going to meet there, because that's the kind of people you're going to make as your friends. That's the kind of people you're going to create in your world. For this, you're prepared. Well, have a lovely morning, a lovely day, a lovely life. And this belongs in the absolute. And remember that. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.